Where we are today is not where we started 25 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 10 years ago. We're just constantly evolving. I listen to young assistants now and they want everything like this. They see me and they're like, I want what you have. I'm not saying you've got to suffer. I just want you to work for what you want. I want your work ethic and your actions to be in alignment with your goals.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and today's Real Talk is with a real leader who I adore and have known her for so many years. And so Shimmy Gray Miller, I'm going to welcome you to the show. This is our first episode of the Business Athlete Edition, folks.
Hello everyone, thank you, Shauna.
Yeah. So folks, as I said to you, Shimmy and I have known each other for ages. She and I played basketball at the University of Michigan. She was a bit ahead of me in the time there. And Shimmy, every time you would walk into the gym, or it's like I could tell your energy was there before you were there. I've always looked up to you.
That's very kind. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's been awesome to watch your evolution from afar. Folks, Shimmy has been an experienced, accomplished baller of a college basketball coach, Division I level college basketball coach, has now taken her, I call it pursuits, into the arena of broadcasting. So we'll go into all of that. Shimmy, I have to pause and say, I love that when you just laugh, because your laugh, I told you, I see your pictures and I can hear you laughing. It always makes me so happy. But folks, I'm so excited about this that I haven't really been able to sleep thinking about preparing for this episode. And I had wanted to create this episode for quite some time. So if anybody follows me who listens, if you follow me on Instagram or LinkedIn, you've seen me write about 4 or 5 articles now about the business athlete concept. And I had wanted to create this episode, but it was like I was waiting for the ideal guest. And Shimmy, that was you. You posted something and I was just like, I got to have her on the show. But I didn't totally know what I wanted you to focus on, or us to focus on. And then I tried to get you on the show and you ghosted me.
What? I probably did. I've had, this has been a year of transition for me. So my ghosting was not intentional. It was more like, you know, like the kind of like the Scooby-Doo ghost, where it's not like a bad ghost. It's kind of like, you know, foiled, you know, but you get them right in the end. They get the ghost in the end. So,
but I'm persistent. So I came back at you. You posted recently about an athlete, a track athlete, runner, sprinter. And it was a post about her internal narrative. And you had some really poignant words. And I was like, she's my business athlete episode guest. So thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for being persistent and sticking with me. So.
Absolutely. Okay, so folks, before we get started, I am going to calm down. But Shimmy, I pulled out some things for this episode. My basketball, it's upside down. So folks, if you're not watching this on video, you're hearing it. I'm showing Shimmy my basketball from high school, college, as I grew up. It says Michigan High School Athletic Association on it. Yeah. Well, I'm HFAA. So this I pulled out of my box for you. I have more. Wait.
Did you win a state championship? Gabriel Richard,
my senior year.
Yes.
Gabriel Richard. I think it was double overtime, triple overtime. Can't even remember now. Okay, I got another one for you.
Okay. Hey, your name tag from your locker, Sikorsky.
My name tag from my locker, folks, at the University of Michigan. I remember my freshman year walking in and seeing my jersey, my uniform, my name tag. And I about lost it. It was so awesome. All right, I got another one. I got 2 more things for you. You ready?
Okay. Oh. Your AAU jersey? Was that your All-State?
No, because I think that was like, this is like way before. This is AAU, so this is so small and so polyester. Okay. It hurts my hands to hold it up. But this is from, it was called Little Ma Power, was our AAU team, because I played in the Detroit League. And I think Allstate was like the sponsor back then. I mean, this is like the first version of a jersey patch, I think.
Yeah, that actually looks like one of those generic jerseys that you would see on like one of those movies, like Teen Wolf or something, and everybody's wearing type of jersey.
Teen Wolf, 100% nylon, by the way. Real good for your soak up that sweat. Do you have any idea what the last thing is going to be?
Your Michigan jersey number? You weren't number 25, were you? Your varsity, no. I already saw it. Your Letterman's jacket. Nice. Nice. I still have mine too.
Have you ever tried to put this thing on? It's like a tent. How did we wear things back then?
But remember, Shauna, like we were just so happy to have that Block M. Because I was the first class, maybe the second class of women that got the Block M. So then you were a couple years behind me after I graduated. So it was still fairly new, but not a lot of people know this. Michigan, and we love Michigan, you know, Michigan's an amazing university. Obviously, I love it. I love everything about being a Wolverine, but very sexist. And, you know, just really kind of behind the times with Title IX. And Bo Schembechler was the AD there, you know, after he retired as the football coach. And he just was very adamant that gymnasts were not going to wear the same Block M as his football players. And so the women's Letterman's jacket was a script M. For the longest time. And then a group of women, former athletes, were like, no, enough is enough. And they fought really, really hard for this. So I believe it was like 1990, 91 was the first year that women got that Letterman's jacket. So all former female student athletes who received that script jacket, they got to return it. And get a Letterman's jacket. And then so for the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of Title IX, which I believe was last year, if I'm not mistaken, they had a big, you know, a big deal for former women athletes and women. And they once again invited them, hey, if you have not had a chance in the last 25 years to return your jacket, you can get one. So, that thing was heavy. It's uncomfortable, but I still have it. And I will keep that. You can bury me in that because, you know, a lot of women worked really, really hard for us to have that jacket, that Block M.
Well, I'm so glad you told that story. I had no idea. I'm also an Ann Arbor native. I had never heard that story before. How awesome is that? Yeah. I keep mine in the special, like, Ziploc. All this stuff is, like, in a Ziploc bag. like, a trunk that sits over, and I haven't opened it in ages. I was actually, like, I was expecting it to, like, creak, you know, like, as I was opening the trunk. But, yeah, no, it's awesome.
Yeah. So, true story.
Great.
And it's crazy because, you know, I mean, in spite of that, I still, you know.
Just a bobblehead.
Bo, are you happy that we get to Block M now? He says yes. He says yes.
He says he was wrong.
He said yes, so.
But actually, I wasn't totally sure if I was going to go into this because I don't want to derail the entire conversation. But let's just talk for a second about like the progression of women's basketball since, when I actually think about when we were playing, it doesn't feel that long ago, but it was kind of a long time ago, completely a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
She's crushing me, folks. No, but like, I remember after I graduated and then started working with Nike in the WNBA, and I saw you and I got together when I was out working with the Seattle Storm. And like, that was when the league was really just getting going. I mean, and you had the powerhouses, the Tina Thompsons, Elisa Leslie, Cynthia Cooper, all of them. But it's like, just to see what's happened since then, everything from the college game, the WNBA, like all of it. It's crazy to me how kind of quickly but it still has quite a far way to go.
Yeah, I mean, but you can say that, you know, I try to tend to focus more on where we are, you know, and versus like where we are today is not where we started 25 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. We're just constantly evolving. And sometimes I think it's best, you know, not best, but sometimes it's okay to move slowly as long as you keep moving forward, right? Can't stand still, can't go backwards. You just got to keep moving forward. And as a coach, that was my coaching philosophy. And, you know, so my players, they would, if they heard us listening to this right now, they'd roll their eyes because they've heard that a million times. Where you are today is not where you were, and it's not where you're going to be. Yeah. It's just where we are today, and we have to keep moving forward. And so you can say the same about the evolution of women's basketball. Today, there's more access. There's more access than ever before, Shauna. And it's so girls have more access to skills trainers. You know, they have more access to high-level competition. They have a women's, a girls' EYBL league from Nike, which is like the highest level of competition. I mean, your all-state team, you know, I played for the Brick City Bombers. Like, I mean, the competition wasn't that great. I mean, let's be honest. And now these players have the opportunity to play against like the best players in the world. There's teams from Australia and, you know, in Canada that are coming over to these events, you know, so they have access to a lot. And they also have access to, you know, just visibility, Shauna. Like when I was growing up, I had to pretend to be Larry Bird. Now young girls, they see Sue Bird. They can be Sue Bird, right? But I didn't have that. I was dying. Right. You know, they would show two women's college basketball games on television every year. That was the Final Four game, so the semis and the national championship game. It was played on the same weekend, like a Saturday and a Sunday. So the three games that they would show. And then I remember my mom would have a subscription to Sports Illustrated. So I was always trying to cut, you know, anytime that there was a women's basketball player or a women's athlete, I'd cut it out and I'd put it on my wall. Do you know what I had on my wall? I had, you know, Chris Everett Lloyd, Martina Navratilova, Billie Jean King, because those were the athletes, the female athletes that Sports Illustrated highlighted. Every now and then from that championship weekend, there might be a tiny little article. Oh, by the way, Tennessee won the championship. By the way, USC won the championship. It may be a tiny little picture of Cheryl Miller, and I'd cut it out, hang it on my wall or put it in your locker. But now you've got entire like channels, apps, digital, just devoted solely to women's basketball. It's, you know, so the access has changed. And of course, I think a lot of that has to do with money. You know, someone realized, hey, we can monetize this. We can make just as much money off girls basketball or women's basketball, maybe not just as much, but we can make money. And so that's what's happened. And so whether it's good or bad or not, but you've got people, it's a lot of male event operators for girls basketball that are making millions of dollars every year from these tournaments and these events that, you know, wasn't there when we were there. So right now there's a starts tomorrow. I'm in Chicago right now, right down the street at McCormick Center. Is a Nike event that starts. There's going to be 500 teams there.
Wow.
So the teams pay fees. Then all the college coaches who come to recruit, they pay a large amount to come to watch. And then they're charging all their parents and fans and spectators. So, you know, we're talking of over a million, seven figures for one weekend of girls basketball. It's insane.
Wow. It's insane.
That was a long answer. I'm sorry about that.
No. It's great. No, it's great. And it's actually funny because when you were talking, I thought back to, I don't know about if you do this, but I kind of go back to this, like my inner child comes alive because I go back to thinking about like walking into gyms and I would go play in Detroit and I was one of maybe like three or four girls, air quotes girls, and it was all guys. And I just never really, I don't know, you know, I didn't actually think about it. Kat DiGiustino used to be there sometimes. Kat DiGiustino, she and I played AAU together.
Kat, yeah, yeah. Girl. Yeah, 55. I love Kat.
I know. Yeah. No, but you know, I always felt really special, but I didn't really think about the sort of like humongous dichotomy. I was just thought I was really cool that I got to go play with the guys. And I think it was like you were a couple years ahead of me, a few years ahead of me. So it was like you saw a layer of it that I wasn't really seeing. I wasn't looking at more of the macro view. I was just like, oh yeah, I go get the ball, you know? And I felt really special. But it's I just love to hear your perspective of it, and especially after everything you've evolved through over, you know, since then.
Yeah, it has changed, and I think, you know, it starts and ends with access, and the access that we didn't have that young girls have now, and the whole you know, monetization of it, you know, which, you know, no one can make you there. If people, someone realized, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, that you can make money off girls basketball, trust me, this thing would have moved along a lot faster.
Yeah, that's actually a really good, that's a really, really good point. But so I would love, I know we always spend a bit of time talking about, you know, the just the landscape of basketball and how we know each other and all of that, but like talk to us and tell the audience like what you've been doing since then. And I know you've had this incredible career as a collegiate coach, as I mentioned earlier, and now you're getting into the broadcasting scene. So catch us up on where you've been and what you're up to now.
Well, this has been like when I say this has been like a season of transition, it's been a season of transition. In the last year, I was talking to my fiance about this. Like, it hasn't even been a year. So we'll just start with August of 2022. In August of 2022, I got a promotion to associate head coach at the University of Minnesota. So associate head coach of a Power Five, Big Ten, you know, women's, which is crazy because I started in the Big Ten as a player. And now, you know, associate head coach in this conference that, you know, I played in. And so I got a promotion, making the most money I've ever made in my life, which is insane. I also finished, you know, it was a long process, but I finished my master's degree. So then I got engaged. So this is all started like in the month of August. Then I got engaged, you know. Then in March, my head coach at University of Minnesota gets fired. And when that happens, the whole staff, mo most of the time, the whole staff goes with her because a new coach likes to bring in their new people. Right away, my phone started ringing. I had, you know, offers to hey, come coach here and come coach here and come coach here. But I decided that at that moment, I knew I don't want to coach anymore. And I wasn't like, I would not have stepped down had my coach not gotten fired. But when she got fired and she told us, hey, you know, we're not going to be here anymore, of course I was sad. I was sad for her, but it was also a little bit of a relief for me. I'm not a quitter, and you know, I had given her my word. I'm very loyal. I was going to stick with her for a little bit longer. I wasn't ready to step away, but also personally, I was ready to step away. You know, I've done long distance. I've been in a long distance relationship for 5 years now. And with us being engaged, I wasn't willing to spend the first year of our, you know, of our married life. We're getting married in September, the first year of our married life separate. So it was like, so then I moved, you know, then I moved from Minneapolis to Chicago, which is where I live now. I've been here now for about 6 or 7 weeks. And now I'm preparing for a wedding. In addition to that, my mother, I had to move my mother in hospice care a couple months ago. So you just think about like any one of those events, you know, getting your master's, getting engaged, moving, quitting a job, starting something new, dealing with the, you know, the decline of your parent. Like any one of those things is a major event. I've dealt with all those things, you know, in less than a year, which has just been crazy. So this has just been the year of change. Changes is scary. You know, change is scary, but it's also an opportunity, and it's an opportunity for something better to occur. And I'm excited for the opportunities that I have in front of me.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So over the years of you, how many schools were you coaching at? How many, like over the
I've lost
time
track. I have
you've
lost
lost?
track. I will say this, I've coached in every, and I believe, I'm not sure, but our sports information director believed when he was doing his research a couple years ago that I am the only assistant coach to have coached in every Power Five conference. So I've been in the Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, ACC, SEC. And then I also spent 7 years as a head coach at St. Louis University. I was at a junior college in outside Seattle. So I've been from the bottom, from the very, very bottom to the very top, and everything in between.
It's so great. And I asked you that because I think that one thing I always talk about on the show is about people's evolution, and that a lot of times you put in so much work over time to get to a certain level, right? And I think that a lot of times people don't necessarily, when they hear about coaching, they hear about professional athletes, it's somehow separate from the business world. And you and I've talked about this, like the whole concept of the business athlete is this interesting union, this interesting parallel. There's so much there. And I think just like someone like me on the called the corporate business side, I started traveling around with Nike, with WNBA teams. And like, I remember working in the basement of the Asheville Civic Center for the MBDL when the NBA started the what's now the G League. But it's like to get as far as you do, you put in so much work and a lot of that grunt level, but it really does help propel you. And it does, it enriches you and gives you such perspective over time.
It's, you know, I guess I try not to be that old, get off my lawn, you know, person, lady, but I, you know, I listen to young assistants now and they want everything like this. And they see me and they're like, I want what you have. Well, I was an overnight success that was like 25 years in the making, right? You know, yeah. So like what you see is, you know, Coach Shimmy, she makes this amount of money, or she's associate head coach, or she's, you know, she's this. But what you didn't see is Coach Shimmy, you know, washing towels and cleaning uniforms and driving vans. And, you know, what you didn't see is Coach Shimmy getting that $475 a month stipend for her first coaching job. And then having to work at a coffee shop 6 days a week in the mornings to actually be able to afford her rent, you know? Yeah. So it's like kind of like that iceberg, like everybody sees the tip of the iceberg, but you don't see what's underneath it. So I don't know. I mean, you're in corporate world. I read somewhere, cause I like to read, I read a lot. And I read somewhere that someone says, do not do any unpaid work. Don't do any unpaid internships. Don't do any, you know, and I know that there's like, because they're like, no, they're just getting free labor off you. But meanwhile, I'm like, that's the best way you can get experience and network. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying allow someone to take advantage of you and I'm going to work unpaid for a year. That's not what I'm saying. But if I have an opportunity to roll my sleeves up and do something that's ultimately going to help me to get to where I am, like what's wrong with that? You know, I was never afraid to work hard. I think that's why I was successful as an athlete. And I think that's why I was successful as a coach. And I know that's why I'm going to be successful as a broadcaster or whatever it is that I do next.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. These foundational elements, and I wrote about it in some of my articles and like so much that we talked about here, even so far in this episode, it's like coachability, mindset, hard work, that grit. And I mean, I talk about the business athlete, and not to alienate someone, I'm not saying that this is a concept only for people who have been athletes, because like in business, people do air quotes, athletic things. And that's what I'm talking about with this mentality that you're talking about, that hard work, the patience. And the interesting thing about the patience, Shimmy, when you were talking, just made me think about this. I think sometimes people hear that people, you know, like me or like you, because we're the people, the get off my lawn types, right? Where it's like, oh, they're just saying that because they've been there and they want me to have to suffer like they did type thing. And that's not what it is. I think it's like understanding what we got from that experience and having things not handed to us. I mean, Shimmy, I was a walk-on at U of M my first year. I worked my ass off.
You were a walk-on who did what though? You were a walk-on who earned a scholarship. Yeah. You weren't given it, you earned it. And you earning that scholarship, it probably meant far more to you than someone like me who had like 30 offers coming out of college. You know, I knew I was going to get a, you know, I knew. And so I'm not saying that I didn't appreciate, you know, my scholarship or that I took it for granted, but you earned yours. You had to, you know, you had to work to get a scholarship. I didn't, you know, I was going to get a scholarship. And, and here's the other thing, Shauna, is I am not saying like, that here's what I'm saying, because and I talk about this and I actually wrote about this too, is that I hear this a lot. Well, when I was a player or when I was a young assistant, I had to suffer in order. I'm not saying you've got to suffer. I don't want you to suffer. I just want you to work for what you want. I want your work ethic and your actions to be in alignment with your goals. That's what I want. So you can't say that you want to be a top assistant or that you want to be a CEO or you want to be executive, but your actions aren't in alignment with that. So that's all I want. I don't want you to suffer. I suffer, you know, I don't want you to suffer. I had verbally abusive coaches. I'm not going to verbally abuse you, you know, because just because I can say, well, it worked for me. Look at me now. I'm tougher. No, I don't think you have to go to suffer in order to obtain success. But I want you, your actions to be in alignment with your goals.
That's so good and so accurate. And I think that there's an element you and I are having this conversation about what we experienced and what we're looking for the next generation coming up. And this is such a great mirror for me right now in my own evolution, because the same patience that I'm talking about, it required for us to go through that, and it requires that next generation coming up, that patience to do all that work underneath the iceberg that's above the water, like you're saying. It's like, I have to remember that right now for myself, as I'm pushing and grinding through this next phase of my evolution, I have to remember that it takes that patience. It takes that time to cultivate where you're going. Hopefully it doesn't take as long, but you know, it's like, because I get that concept of wanting it to happen more quickly than maybe it's the natural sort of coming of whatever that next thing is. So I'm just saying, I think it's a great thing we're talking about, even for me to hear. I'm going to play this back for myself, Shimmy. But it really is true though, what you were saying about like the actions to align with your goals. And this is something that I talk a lot about in business with people that I coach, is about creating these filters for yourself when you're going to make a decision. And that's the exact same thing, where it's like, if you have goals, and what actions are you taking to help you get there? So if someone comes to you and says, I want to pay you half of what you're worth, and your goal is to, you know, feel good about yourself, feel valued, and make the appropriate amount of money, then if you have some filters there, you're like, oh, wait a second, I'm not going to take that action because that's not going to align with that goal. So, you know, again, this is this like really interesting parallel, I think, of that player, coach, athlete world and the business world.
Correct. And it's when I, you know, started approaching coaching like that, like this is how I've evolved as a coach, is in the beginning, the first decade of my career, it was all about X's and O's. Well, as I've evolved the last, you know, 14 years or so, it's been more about, you know, the mental aspect of it, the, you know, the values-based coaching. So, you know, this is how I would start every year with my players, and I coached post players for my entire career. So it was like a team within a team. And I would always start is, we're going to have a one-on-one. What are your goals? Like, what are your goals? Let's talk about it. Because then what we're going to do is we're going to build an action plan based around your goals. And so if you tell me that your goal is to be a WNBA player or to be an all-conference player, and then we build this action plan, and then you're not sticking with the plan, then I can just go put it back on you. Then this is you, you know, then this is not, doesn't have anything to do with me. This is you. Right now, your actions aren't in alignment with your goals. So then it makes it very simple. But what I'm doing is I'm putting the burden of responsibility. I'm giving back the player's ownership versus the old style of coaching of this is what you're going to do and you're going to do this every day and because I said so. It's like I really have gotten away from that as I've evolved.
Yeah. And it's so great. You're hearing that sense of authentic leadership and caring about the whole person makes such a difference. And, you know, when I'm coaching people in the business world, that's the same thing where it's like, we're going to have this conversation. I want that this like feedback to you, you know, you can give me feedback as well, that exchange, and not a top-down approach, but exactly what you're saying in, let's do this together. And then I'm going to hold you accountable. And you want to know what? You're going to hold yourself accountable.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Like, I can't make you go run sprints. Suicide.
I mean, I can't, but you're not going to get anything out of it. You know, you're not going to get
better. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the same thing, like, you know, in business, what am I going to do to punish you? Put you on like a, what do they call that? The PIP, the performance improvement plan, you know, that kind of thing. Like that doesn't make you any better. Hold yourself accountable. And that's, yeah, I think that there is a degree to which it doesn't matter if you're a player, if you're an employee there, that there's that element of you have to want to be on that journey and really accept it and lean into it. It can't be forced upon you.
Right. And if it means enough to you,
yes,
then you'll do it. Then you'll find a way. If you mean, and if it doesn't mean enough to you, then you won't. It's that simple.
I love that you said, you posted, I feel like I hang on some of your words, which I totally do, but you posted something about that one day where it was like, it's like important to you. You'll find a way. And if not, you'll find an excuse.
Exactly. And, you know, and once again, when I talk about, as I've evolved as a coach, you know, and I've become more values based, like that's an example of that. And that actually came from my mom. Now those weren't her words. Her words, and I've listened to your podcast, so I know I can swear on this. So her words were more like, you know, excuses are like assholes. Everyone has one and they all smell the same. You know, that was her word. So I've softened it a little bit, but it's basically the same concept. Like, hey, there are no excuses. There's no, well, coach, I didn't have enough time, or coach, that class is too hard, or coach, the gym was locked, you know, or coach, during COVID, I got this loud. Well, coach, I couldn't get into the gym. You know, all my gyms at home are locked, so I couldn't do the workouts. Oh, really? Because you're from Detroit? Well, I'm from Flint. So I know where you live. You don't have outdoor basketball hoops at the school down the street? Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know. Okay. No, it just didn't mean enough to you. And so, so once again, it's not about me. It's about you. Like I've played professional basketball. I've lived all my hoop dreams. So this isn't about me. This is about you.
Yeah. It's so true. God, this is so good. But it is right because thank God I have editing, but anyway, no, it's so good because I really believe that. And it's something that I started talking about recently as like optimal performance. Mm-hmm. And if you are an authentic leader, and you're, when I say that, it's like you show up authentically for yourself and for your people. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're actually wanting to this level of, again, it's like this pursuit of optimal performance for yourself and for that person you're leading. And here's a key for it for me, and I really think this comes from sport, is that it's bigger than me. It's bigger than you. It's like we're air quotes playing for something, but there's a degree to it too, where part of what I play for at this point is that development and that having an impact on the evolution of that person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
mm-hmm.
curious, like, what are your thoughts about that and that parallel to optimal performance?
So, and when I was doing like prepping for this, and I wanted to read more about like business athlete, because I'd never really thought that there was a term that was coined for this, right? So I thought, I went on your LinkedIn, I saw some of the articles you posted, the study that was done, I think by Lore, and it was a while ago, I think it was like 2011, and he gave some examples with a couple of corporate, you know, C-suiters that he was working with. And I started thinking about it. I think that that whole optimal, you know, athlete or optimal business performer, athlete, whatever, yeah. it's performer. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Here's, and so, and I'm glad that we can talk about it because I was thinking a lot about this. Here's my thing is I've been around a lot of athletes and coaches who were not optimal performers. They were successful, but very unhealthy, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, toxic, no boundaries, no work-life, or no balance in their life. You know, maybe even heavy drinkers, but on the outside, they looked the part, and even they were performing at an optimal level, but behind the facade.
Yeah.
But so what if we take the whole, what if we think, rethink this business athlete model, and we just think that it's more about being an optimal person, right?
Yeah.
So it's about eating better. He talked about eating better or getting workout or, you know, showing gratitude or having a release. But does that have to be like what athletes do? Can that just be about being an optimal person, Shauna?
Yeah.
So I'm still like, I'm not, after reading more about it, I'm like, I'm not really sold on the whole business athlete as I am on optimal business.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I think maybe because I've been around too many toxic athletes and coaches.
But here's the thing, Shimmy. Here's the thing. I've been around too many toxic, horrible people who hog leadership seats. That's exactly my thing. That parallels what I'm talking about. And when I talk about the business athlete, it's like that mindset, that drive, all of that. It's something that I say because I think it's something that a lot of people could relate to, or they could imagine what I'm talking about, which is an easier thing to reach for than just the concept of that person who's hiding in plain sight, whether it's a coach who's that toxic asshole, whatever, being abusive to the players, making them run until they puke on the sides or something like that,
or something else.
And it's like, whether you're that person or you're the, again, the asshole, air quotes, leader who is in a seat of leadership where you're actually not, it's not about anything that you talked about earlier about your actions aligning with your goals, about actually pouring into your people and all of that kind of thing. So again, it's easy. The reason why I use that term business athlete that I totally stole from someone else is really just because I think it's easier for people to grasp that association and be like, oh, okay. I can imagine if I can't see myself as a business person who is leading my people and wanting us to win together and that kind of thing, maybe I could see myself as a coach that way in an athletic arena. That's my thing about the parallel.
Here's the other thing too. Is Lors, is that, I'm getting that right? The guy who coined the business athlete.
Okay.
He says, hey, we can improve C-suiters by using this athlete model. Mm. Me, on the other hand, I've improved coaches by using business models. So I've taken a lot of business concepts and brought them into the coaching world, like psychological safety, right?
Yes.
That was not a athlete thing. That was a business thing, you know, creating psychologically safe workspaces.
Yes.
Well, that's been my goal the last 3 or 4 years is to create psychologically safe locker rooms, right? Whole theory of positive psychology by Seligman, you know, so just using that, once again, that wasn't for athletes. That was for business and corporate and treating your employees a certain way. And so I brought that into coaching. Positive psychology theory in coaching. And then the whole like mindfulness and just, you know, because with athletes, it's all about like like physical, developing your physical skills and you know, and grit. But for me, we don't spend enough time as coaches or athletes training the mind, right? And the mental is to physical as four is to one. And so that's how I've evolved, is I actually started reading a lot of business books and then trying to turn these, you know, into what I, how I could be a better coach.
We're literally like the different sides of this, because just as you're saying all this, I'm like, yes, of course. And the same psychological safety that you're talking about, I have with the staff that I've led, where I'm like, you know what? I want you to be able to be 100% authentic and bring your whole self to work today so that you feel psychologically safe, and you can shine. Same kind of concept. You know how many business people are out there? They're out there reading books by coaches, professional athletes. They want to know about their journey in the game for the same, it's like that opposite reason why you're over there reading business books. I love this. It's that
I was so sick of coaching books, like so sick of, you know, I read, and I loved all of Pat Summitt's books. You know, I read all of Kay's books. I read Rick Pitino's book. I read, you know, John Calipari's book, John Wooden's book. I was just so sick of coaching books. Yeah. And so, I just started like swerving, you know, into I put my blinker on because I don't want to crash, but I swerved into a different lane. Yeah. And, you know, and when I first read about like Dweck's growth mindset, I was like, this is coaching, like growth mindset versus fixed mindset. Like I said, like this whole concept of psychological safety. And I'm like, locker rooms aren't psychologically safe. What's the number one foundation of healthy cultures? And I think it was Google that maybe did this study, and they found that it was trust. And so here as coaches, we put all this emphasis on the skill set, on the physical. Well, meanwhile, if your locker room or your team lacks trust between teammates, trust between coaching staff, trust between coaches and team and you know, athletes, then it doesn't matter how good you are, how skilled you are, you're still going to fail. So, and luckily I had a couple of head coaches that I worked with, because as an assistant, you know, you're an employee. Yeah. You can only do so much, but I had a couple of head coaches who were very open and allowed me to introduce these concepts within our teaching, within our team.
That's so awesome. And I'm assuming and hoping that as you were saying all that, folks in the audience who are in the business side of things, leading people, leading teams, I swear it's like everything you're saying. Yes, exactly. It's reinforcing, I think, the concept of, as an authentic leader, what we are trying to do with our air quotes players or employees, what we're trying to do with ourselves. This whole episode, you've been talking about your own evolution. Just as you were evolving the game and the players and the universities, the athletic departments you work with, you were also doing that for yourself, which is awesome. And that commitment is, the commitment is so important. So Shimmy, I would keep you on here all day. I know I would. I'm having a ball. I want to wrap it up with a couple final questions, if it's okay.
Okay.
I would love to hear tips from you. Let's start with the air quotes, players or employees. Is there any tips that you would share with that group that we've been talking about today?
Kind of what we talked about earlier for players and employees, I would say start where you are, you know, start where you are and grow, not go, but start where you are and grow from there. Knowing that where you are today is not where you were, but it's also not where you're going to be. So show yourself compassion, show yourself some grace, start where you are and grow from there.
That's fantastic. Thank you. All right, so let's move to the coaches and business leaders. What's your tips for that segment?
You win with people, Shauna. You win with people. And I don't care like how great of a coach you are or how much you know. If you can't get your players to be on your page and to buy in, you know, and to feel safe and to feel like they're valued and you trust them and they trust you, then you're not going to win. And the same goes for, you know, in corporate world. Like you, as a leader, you win with your people. So people first. So you got to take care of your people and then you'll get the results that you want. Culture drives success. It is not the other way around. Success doesn't drive culture. Culture drives success. So you win with people.
Amazing. And so true. So true. And when you miss the mark on that, forget about it. So
forget about it.
Right. Yeah. This is so. Are there any last takeaways? We covered so many things, everything from our Michigan basketball days to all the stuff you're doing. And any last takeaways you want to make sure that people get from this episode?
Yeah, this is what I want to say, and I kind of touched on this a little bit, but embrace change. You know, change is an opportunity for something better to occur. And to do what I'm doing at my age, and I graduated from college in 1994, so I'll let your listeners do the math on that. But to leave something after 25 years where I've been very successful and where I'm very comfortable and, you know, and at my age to start over is very scary. But the thought of staying in a situation just because it's safe and comfortable is scarier. Yeah. So you leave for the right reasons, don't stay for the wrong reasons.
Yes. I only wish I would have realized that sooner in my business career. So thank you. This entire episode was, again, like I said earlier, a wonderful mirror for myself and my own journey. So Shimmy, I can't thank you enough. I have a feeling I'm going to ask you to come back on and do more of these. We'll have to see what the audience has to say. And I am so excited to also watch you continue to just absolutely thrive in your broadcasting adventures and in your new married life and your growing family. So thank you so much for sharing your time and a part of yourself with me and the audience today.
Shauna, I just want to thank you. Thank you for giving. You make all of us better with what you post, what you put out into the universe. So I just want to thank you.
Oh, thanks so much. All right, everybody, have an awesome day. See you soon.